Diana.
It's nice to talk with you again. We last spoke last month, July the 11th. Of course, you've been on the show probably more than anybody. This show and then the show that I had when I lived in Hawaii. And I've said this on the air before, but when your first edition came out of Divorce with Decency, the complete how-to handbook and survivor's guide to the legal, emotional, economic, and social issues, first came out, there was an article in the Honolulu Advertiser with your adorable photo. And I read it and said, oh, I need to have this guy on my show, and called you up. And that was the beginning of not only a professional relationship, you being on my radio show quite a bit in Hawaii and now quite a bit on Progressive Radio Network, but also
one of the most fun-loving personal relationships we ever had. You were a lot of fun when you were here in Hawaii, and you're probably still a lot of fun in Seattle, although I don't get to see you as much anymore. I sure enjoy talking to you, and I enjoy talking to your audience.
Thank you. It's very mutual. It's nice to have a fun, intelligent friend, and we're often on the same page when it comes to all kinds of issues. So that's good too. So in our show, our last show together, I mean, I think I've lost track. I think we're up to 15, maybe something like that over the years.
I wouldn't doubt it.
Yeah, something like that. And your book is now in its fifth edition, and we talked about that last time you were on the air. We also spoke about causes and risk factors for divorce, about sexuality. Of course, I love to talk about sexuality, and I think you do too.
And I love to listen to you talk about sexuality.
Thank you.
And you know what? You know what's fun is you and I both are, you know, kind of experts in these areas, but what's fun is we share information and sometimes new information with one another. And I've got one that I'm going to drop into the conversation midway through. So keep a pen and pencil handy.
Oh, it's always handy.
I bet it's even new to you, but we can start elsewhere, but we'll work our way into that.
All right. I want to build a suspense. That's called a tease.
Yeah.
Isn't
that a lot of what sexuality is about? No, just kidding, yeah.
No, it is, because a really good lover also knows how to seduce his partner or her partner. Seduction, and some of seduction is teasing.
Yeah, true story.
Yeah, and part of that, just to back up a little bit more, is emotional foreplay. A lot of women really long for more emotional foreplay. You know, that a good sexual encounter for a lot of women starts about 24 hours ahead of time. Is the man being nice? Is her lover being nice to her? For starters. And you know what I'm talking about.
I don't think there's any question of what a lot of women seem to almost prefer foreplay to foreplay to the actual sex act itself. You know, that seems to have been borne out a fair amount.
Yes. Yes. But
I've never actually been a woman, but I know from what I've read that it's really almost more important. You know, I don't know whether it was you or somewhere else I picked this up, because like I say, we trade back and forth so much, but they've got this term outer course as opposed to intercourse, where they talk about surveys that indicate women prefer foreplay to sex by 24%.
Sure, and by sex, of course, you mean intercourse. I try to get my clients to use the word intercourse, because I think that sex is so much more than outer course, And, yes, but emotional foreplay also means, of course, maybe sending your lover a sexy text earlier in the day if you know you're going to get together, being complimentary, you know, showing appreciation. We all often need to feel appreciated and needed, and not so much needed that it's like codependency, because I like to say that there's a difference between want and need, and ideally, you should be able to look at your partner and say, I want you even more than I need you. You know what, partner? I can live without you, but I can live so much better with you.
I prefer to live with you, yeah. No, that's a great way of putting it.
Yeah. And so, and your book, now in its fifth edition.
Can you believe that?
Yeah, well, sure I can. And
I don't think the University of Hawaii Press has ever printed a fifth edition of any of their books. I talked to the head guy over there just the other day. You know, they almost never do that. Even for their own professors, they don't do that. So people must be interested in this book. And you know, the title's almost misleading now because it's not just a divorce book. I mean, it's called Divorce with Decency, but the actual aspect of it goes so much further than divorce. I mean, you know, the cover quotes by the chief judge, the former chief judge of the family courts here in Hawaii, and he said, this is far more than just a divorce book. It's an all-encompassing survey of love, marriage, and romantic relationships in modern life. And that's pretty accurate. That's what I've really tried to do with it, and that's why I think both you and I tie in so well together.
Yes, and why you quoted me in your book, too.
Many times.
Yes, no, we do. And I've always really loved it. I've appreciated that you go on cruises and you don't talk, you talk about your book, Divorce with Decency, but you also talk about how to avoid divorce. And I think that's such a good thing, of course.
Well, I've lectured for 15 years on the cruise ships about, you know, romantic relationships in general. And even in my law office, where a lot of people come in with the intent of getting divorced, I really go through the hoops of trying to see whether they really need to, or whether there isn't some way that it could be, you know, turned around and saved, you know, maybe referral to a sex therapist, for example.
Yeah, well, it's sort of hard for you to do it when I'm in Seattle, but I do remember when just after Hawaii, I was in L.A. for a while, and you did refer a woman to me, one of your clients. But it was hard to do it at the distance. Anyway.
Well, I'll keep trying.
Yeah, of course. Of course. So you've done, and you probably, well, you lecture all around Honolulu, too. And
every week nowadays, yeah.
Every week, and what are the main themes when you lecture weekly?
Well, you know, the problem is you go through all kinds of gyrations, sometimes taking years to write these damn books, and you think at the end the publisher says, okay, it's ready to go, and you breathe a big sigh of relief, and thinking, okay, my job's done, and then you realize you got to sell the darn thing. So
yeah, the marketing.
You know, I've been giving speeches at Honolulu Media lately on a sort of a statistical and demographic fact sheet for, you know, basically divorce and family law cases. And we talk about, you know, marriage and sex and the rise of the women's movement. We probably ought to get to talking about that today if we can, because that's a major one.
Mm-hmm.
And I talk about the pros and cons of marriage. Here's one that's an interesting one I came across for this latest speech. I came across a graph that purported to show a happiness hierarchy of males and females, married and unmarried, and the happiest are married men, second happiest, single women, third happiest, single men, and last but not least, married women were the least happy of all, which is pretty interesting.
I think it is. And it also, there's a sexual tie-in, of course, there too, in that women who remain sexual as they age, it really helps them with aging, and but they have to be in a happy relationship across the board emotionally, to have good emotional intimacy as well as physical intimacy, because if a woman doesn't like the sex she's having in a relationship, then it's not going to be a plus for her at all. Whereas guys, maybe their standards are a little bit lower, as long as they're getting laid.
Guys' standards are definitely lower. But I think, you know, it works both ways. Certainly, if a guy is not pleasing his gal, and we all know now that it takes, you know, we've talked about this many times on your show, I mean, it takes women, you know, four or five times as long to achieve true fulfillment of sex time-wise. You know, we're talking 18, 20 minutes versus five or six for guys to achieve, you know, full enjoyment of sex, including orgasm. Whereas guys, you know, are hop on, hop off. And and guys can probably hop on and hop off, you know, of a lot wider variety of people, whereas women have kind of got to be really in love with the guy. But there are a lot of problems in relationships where women have kind of come to the conclusion, rightly or wrongly, that sex is not that important a factor in their marriage, and they may be acting at their peril if, you know, because guys, even if they're not great at it, and even if their sexuality peaks in their teens, and whereas women, it's in their 30s, if guys are not getting at least some level of sex, then, you know, they can be dissatisfied pretty fast and start looking on the outside. And nowadays, one of the places that they look is the, you know, porn, internet porn. So we can talk about that later.
Well, or maybe sooner.
Okay.
because complaints about porn use constitute the number one problem walking in the doors of many. Not all, but many couple and sex therapists today. I would say for me, it's about a third of my clients coming in the Seattle area, or it comes out because a lot of my couples, the guys are really tech savvy and have been able to bring up porn even on their smartphones for quite a while. You know, Pornhub has done research and they found that the number of porn videos viewed worldwide is estimated at 88 billion, and that's 10 billion more than the previous year. And this is all according to research conducted by Pornhub. That's a lot of porn viewing. And apparently about 90% of young men report using pornography with some regularity, and this surprised me, 34% of young women. So 90% of young men, 34% of young women.
Say those again.
90% of young men report using pornography with some regularity, as do 34% of young women.
Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah, and but on the other side, we have a lot of women who get really upset when they discover that their partner, married or not married, right, is using porn, because some women, unless they have pretty good, strong self-esteem and all that, they recognize that the images that are on the screen bear a little resemblance to what she looks like, or to what she and her husband do in bed. And so I get women in my practice who feel hurt and betrayed, you know, almost as if she'd found him in bed with another woman. So
I've got an interesting, there's a part of my book where I talk about how porn tends to create what I call unrealistic sexpectations. And I've got a quote that I think really sums it up, and I'm quoting from the book. Now that anybody with a smartphone can order up personally customized, including extreme and or perverted sexual desires, as delivered by pumped-up professionals aided by silicon, steroids, and sexual skill sets beyond the capabilities of most mere mortals, how long does it take before fantasy fetishes replace and drastically diminish real human relationships? And that's really, that's really true. That is exactly the problem. It may not bear any real relationship to what you've got in your real relationship, and then the real relationship suffers by comparison.
No, it's really true. And then, I know we're going to talk about future predictions toward the end of the show, but just another tease here. A future prediction in terms of sexuality and pornography is that there will be sort of real life looking dolls that are more available, robotic, where they feel and look like a real woman. That's gonna take us to another step altogether.
Well, now your tease has overlapped my tease. Here's the new phrase that I just picked up.
Okay.
It's called teledildonics. I'm spelling it out for you and the listeners. Teledildonics. Teledildonics is like teledildonics. Teledildonics, which is the new virtual reality technology designed to create, quote, a fully immersive high-tech sexual experience, including an actual sense of touch. So this
wow.
is being worked on. This is being worked on. The Japanese companies are all over this because masturbation is almost outproducing, outproducing real reproduction in Japanese society. The men and women, and one of the trends that porn causes everybody to possibly have to deal with is that the genders start going diverging and going their own separate ways. You know, if they no longer need one another so much physically, they may simply be in the process of going their own separate ways. And that is definitely what's happening in Japan. The marriage rate's way down. The childbearing is way, way down.
Yes.
Masturbation's way up. Sex for procreation way down. I mean, you know, those trends are totally traceable, both in the U.S. Birth rates are down. You've got this sort of new trend: masturbation rates up, intercourse rates down. It's kind of squirrely, and this teledildonics is really bizarre, because if you know, you could, like you were saying, if you can actually really reenact or enact the entire sexual experience with a doll, that's pretty funky. And if you get to a situation where young men who are already being outpaced by young women, we've talked a lot about what we call the growth of the she economy, or how the women's movement is outpacing, men. You've got these young men now that can bed beautiful women without ever leaving their parents' basement. And, how are they ever going to even develop the skills and energy required to focus on real relationships if that's the way the way they're dealing with the world? So it is definitely a game changer.
Yes, it certainly is. I think we need to remember that porn is not about a relationship. And for some men, it may be about the freedom to be self-centered. Because porn never says no. It carries no opportunity for rejection. And no negotiation is needed. And so a lot of men choose to watch porn because it's easy and quick, and they can escape the burden of having to please a partner. I have been seeing a Japanese man for about a year with his Asian wife. She's not from Japan, but and they have a lot of sexual troubles. And he grew up in Japan where even his mother rarely touched him. So there are, and of course I do know that the rate of childbirth is way down in Japan. That concerns that country, I know.
It's a huge social problem for Japan.
Mm-hmm.
I'm married to a Japanese woman, and fortunately for us, we're still able to keep a sex life going to at least some degree. But I'll tell you, a lot of her friends have just—they've bailed on wanting to be with men. Period.
Right.
And because the Japanese women get roped into this situation where they're almost a slave to their mother-in-law. The men go down to the Ginza and drink till 4 a.m. Try and flirt with the geishas or whatever, the concubines, and they're not great to their wives. And meanwhile, the women who are, highly educated and oftentimes really a lot more adventurous than their husbands, than the men in the society, are trapped in this male-oriented society. I mean, probably the single biggest social problem the Japanese have got is trying to unleash the power of the Japanese woman, which they have not been very successful at doing. And, in America, I mean, the power of the American women to take charge has been one of the biggest social trends in the last couple decades. Actually 3 or 4 decades that we face in America, and it's certainly one of the biggest contributors to divorce. Women are just outpacing men in a whole variety of benchmarks.
Okay, before we get into the she economy, I want to comment a little bit more on what's happening in Japan, because I think your comments are fascinating, and of course, your beautiful wife, born in Japan and speaking English, by the way, with virtually no accent. It's just amazing to me that she can do that.
Amazes me.
Yeah, well, she's a very intelligent woman for sure. But in the early 90s, I made 3 trips to Japan to study the Gai Geishas, the Japanese hosts, and gave them questionnaires to translate it into Japanese. They all worked at this club AI for love, and so it was just a switch. So wealthy women would come to the club. They were often neglected by their husbands. To come to the club, the woman had to be wealthy because the club, very expensive food and drink and a live band and or orchestra to play music with dancing. So these women who were neglected could come and then on their first visit pick a guy in a lineup, 5 or 6 of them lined up.
Wow.
On Saturday nights, they'd wear tuxedos, and the rest of the time, they'd be in Armani suits. And so the way this works is that the woman would pick a guy, and then he would talk to her and dance with her. And if the relationship evolved a little more, then they would go, because this club was in Kabukicho, the sex district of Tokyo, and they might have, in one of the sex hotels, they might have a rendezvous. And some of these relationships actually ended up with the guy becoming her swallow. And that, in effect, meant that he was her kept man. And those relationships, because I interviewed these guys, that relationship might last for 3 months, 6 months, and in some cases up to 3 years. And she would pay off his debts and buy him new clothes. So he was a kept man. And sometimes he could work the early shift in the club and sometimes the late shift, but there were always ground rules. You know, lots of life, of course, you know this, Brad, is about negotiation, right? We negotiate stuff. So that, I think, because I know your next book is going to have something to do with the Japanese female. And so I'm going to share with you the paper that I wrote as a result of that research that was published, but this was a long time ago now.
Yeah, send me the paper and also send me the job application, will you? Wow. That's a pretty wild development. I didn't know. I've never gotten that far into it, but that's an interesting aspect.
Yeah, these guys are, you know, looking at reviewing the questionnaires that I gave them. A lot of them were very idealistic. They felt that they were doing Japan a favor because they were taking care of the women, who many times, you know, the husband that they might have would come home and say, massage, bath, and bed, and food, and they'd hardly have more conversation than that. And that
nice.
Is not emotional foreplay. Not
real, real classy. Yeah.
Yeah. So I.
No, that's a big problem. That's a big problem. They've. You know, Japan's a first world nation, and these women are educated and ready to really go out and explore. We've got all kinds of them that have moved to Hawaii just to get the heck out of Japan so they can have some kind of an independent life. You know, in Japan, you go to the highest university, you come from the wealthiest families, you've got this perfect pedigree, and you wind up doing, you know, flower arranging and tea ceremonies for the rest of your life. It's just, nothing against flower arranging or tea ceremonies. I mean, you know, my wife over here has become, you know, one of the top realtors in Hawaii, makes $1 million a year selling real estate, a lot of it to the Japanese. You know, there a lot of people are trying to get out of the Asian countries. You know, the Chinese are trying to get out of China in the same way. And the Koreans have got one of the, I think the Koreans have actually got the lowest birth rate in the world right now. So as soon as these nations become first world nations, you know, they've got higher expectations, and sometimes their culture is not, you know, the Confucian culture is not exactly designed after thousands of years of having wives be submissive to their husbands. They're not exactly designed for, you know, immediate gratification on that score.
That is all very true. I think this is fascinating, and I will send you the paper. You have to be Japanese and speaking Japanese to get to work in this club.
Oh, damn.
Send you. Well, anyway, I let's get back to porn and some typical responses, not just for Japanese men, but for all kinds of men worldwide. And just 1 second. I need to get rid of my cell phone because I got a call interrupt, and they may call back on the cell phone, and I don't want to hear it. So, all right. So the man will watch pornography often as a way to relax, and it's fascinating to me as a sex therapist that many men who might have problems with erectile dysfunction, ED, with a partner never do when they're watching porn. He doesn't have to focus on her needs. And, of course, you need to relax in order to get an erection.
Well, and he's getting it handed to him, another bad pun, in exactly the way he wants it. So, you know, it is definitely... it's definitely a lot easier. It's a lot quicker, a lot cheaper. You don't have to take them out to dinner, you know.
That's
and it's
right.
Just, it's definitely changing the landscape. And, you know, it's not just the pornography is easy to talk about. Mm-hmm. You know, I knew you'd bring it back around to sex somehow. But but the internet in general, internet and social media and online dating is also a huge game changer, because. You know, it used to be when you and I were growing up, Diana, to the extent that we ever grew up, you know, you would have to meet somebody live and in person. You know, the maid of honor would meet the best man at somebody's wedding, and, you know, they'd have a couple too much champagne, and the next thing you know, they'd be getting married. I mean, you'd meet in a bar somewhere or whatever, but you know, it was live, it was in person, and it was happening, you know, relatively rarely by comparison to what's happening nowadays. Nowadays, you don't have to meet anybody physically. The proximity of the internet is worldwide. The timing is immediate. You just switch on your Tinder app, and you know, you're off and going. So what that has done is it's increased the pool of potential mates, you know, much, much bigger. I mean, you know, it used to be you met a girl, you were from a small town, you thought, hey, I better marry her, otherwise I'll never meet another girl, you know, as wonderful as she is. If, mm-hmm. You know, people got married younger, they got married, you know, they got married at all. But with the internet, you know, the pool of potential mates is basically infinite, and its accessibility is instant. So the opportunity cost of giving up on any one potential suitor is much lower, since there's now this exponentially expanded number of more easily available prospective new mates. So what that the ripple effect of that is that it works in favor of shorter-term revolving relationships instead of longer-term seriously committed ones, because you can always blow off whatever relationship you're in and jump into a new one almost, you know, pretty readily. Whereas before there was always the, oh my God, if I lose him or her, will I ever be in love again? Now you can be in love or at least in lust in another, you know, 5 minutes on Tinder by swiping right. I forget which way you're supposed to swipe on Tinder, right or left, but whatever.
Oh, you haven't been on Tinder lately, Brad?
Well, I'm a married man, Diana. Yeah.
I know.
But it is, a lot of my clients are, you know, I mean, I'm up to speed on some of this stuff.
Sure.
And it is astounding the way that's changed the whole nature of relationships. So now the number of people getting married is way, way down. You know, the age at which people get married is way, way up. And the duration of marriages are way, way shorter. So it's changed the whole landscape, really. You know, social media in general, you know, and not to mention pornography.
Yeah, it sure has. And I see young people that are single in my practice, and you know, they'll be online, whether it's through Tinder or OkCupid or whatever. And sometimes, this is not true, I guess, for Tinder, because they meet up, and that's more like a hookup. But like OkCupid or even Match.com or some of the others, they often will have texting relationships that go on for several weeks before they actually meet. And for some of the more introverted guys who are software programmers, this is preferable, but then you don't really get the full, you don't hear the person's voice, and in person you also get body language. So it's limited in terms of first impressions if you just text.
Well, and you know, you lose the, I mean, again, the whole social media phenomenon, the computerization of the world, you lose the skills oftentimes required for a real interpersonal relationship. I mean, compared to the days where you used to have to work up your nerve to ask some girl out, now these relationships consist of, hey, babe, me and the guys are going to go at Joe's Bar at 7 o'clock tonight. You know, why don't you and some of your friends come on down and meet us?
Mm-hmm.
It's different than, asking a girl out, buying a corsage, taking her to the prom. I mean, it's a whole different level of courtship. It's just basically, it's the hookup culture now. And,
right.
And so a lot of the individual approach and the fulfillment of the individualized romance disappears into the void of, let's all go out and meet en masse. Then by the time we're really, once we're drunk enough, then we'll split off. And, it doesn't have the intimacy that used to happen in old-fashioned courtships, that's for sure.
And some of the advice that I give to people I'm seeing, single people or people newly married, is never stop courting even after you're married. Never stop dating.
Never, ever take the woman for granted.
And, I say to the guys, when you asked her to marry you, you promised to be that man that would own her heart and fiercely protect it. And this is the most important and sacred treasure you will ever have entrusted to you. She chose you. Never forget that. Never get lazy in your love. That's what I say about never stop courting.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more.
Yeah, it's... and the little romantic cards and all of that. All of these things take time. And, of course, a lot of people don't have very much time. But if you want, if you want a good relationship and good sex, you got to put in the time. And then the nice thing is that also gives you some protection against work stress, because your levels of cortisol and adrenaline are so high with work stresses, and if you're having regular sex and regular orgasms, then you get lots more oxytocin and dopamine and endorphins, and that really helps with stress, pushing it away.
Well, it also helps stave off prostate cancer and a few other things like that. I mean, there's no question, but just having regular orgasms, it decreases the likelihood of getting prostate cancer for guys.
Yeah. That's right. That's very true. There are lots of
Far, I'm knocking on wood. You can't see it, but so far I've managed to dodge that bullet. Maybe I attribute it to an active sex life. I don't know, but a lot of my friends are getting whacked in their late 60s.
I know. And
the other thing is, it changes. It changes the whole. The attitudes that the genders have towards one another. I mean, you get to the situation where the explosion of porn or the internet mating and mate with 15 different people every month, kind of thing. It changes the attitudes of the genders towards one another. I mean, specifically men's sexual behavior towards women changes because they start to treat women as objects. Certainly, that's exactly what porn is all about. And oftentimes, you know, a woman who's willing to just go meet with a guy and five of his friends in a bar, you know, I mean, you may lose some of the respectability quotient that used to be available if you had to, you know, carry your books home from school and do that for 3 or 4 months before you invited her to the prom, and you did that for 4 or 5 months before you finally kissed her, and then another 4 or 5 months before you actually had sex, or you had to get married before you had sex. I mean, all this is totally been turned on its head now. So the whole nature of male and female sexual relations and all other aspects of interspousal relationships has been dramatically changed.
Yeah.
That's
all
what
true.
I see in my practice.
Right, right. It's become really less human and more complex. I wish we could turn back the clock, but you know, there's no turning back the clock. We have social media, we've got pornography, we've got just everything. Before we totally leave porn, I want to say that there's an upside of it, that if both partners accept porn, and it may be female-produced and directed porn, which has a little more of a plot, and it's still explicit, but, you know, there's more interaction and relationship stuff that women like. And I think that female porn use has the benefits because it's a proxy for bringing partners' sexual expectations together. It can actually stimulate some discussion, and I've seen this happen because for some of my couples, not all, they have to be pretty open, and usually they're more likely to be in their 30s or 40s. But I've recommended Erica Luss porn because she's out of Barcelona, and one of my couples actually visited her in her studios in Barcelona, and she makes really high quality explicit films. And she said to the couple that was visiting her that she wants her films to be something that she that her then teenage son, when he's a little older, could watch and be proud of his mother. Isn't that interesting? I think it is, just the
sort
quality
of
porn.
50 Shades of Grey rather than oralsex.com.
Yeah, that's right. But again, you know, we're back to communication is key with couples. And so a lot of couples don't talk about their sexual expectations, their fantasies very much. You know, what they like, what turns them on, and so on. And sometimes pornography can be a platform, a stepping-off place where they can watch it and say, well, maybe, you know, we'd like to try that or something like that.
Well, you would have a better sense of that than I would, but, I mean, it would seem like that would not be all that difficult to sell to the males. But, I mean, how often do you find females that are willing to go along with that? Or interested in taking that approach?
Well, not too often. Not too often. But some do, and I must say that the bottom line, whether it's through watching porn together or some other things, but the willingness of both partners to be open about their sexual fantasies and drop the secrecy, and of course there's a lot of secrecy usually for the men watching porn, and it can really help a relationship if it can be out in the open and maybe they watch together. And I think the woman can live with a partner's porn use as long as she sees that it's not a mark against her. And because, you know, she's comparing herself with the women that she sees
with
on
women
the
that
screen.
Are half her age and have, you know, silicone and everything, yeah.
Right, right. And I think, too, some guys will pick a partner who's not terribly interested in sex. And we're back to negotiation here, and I think that it might be wise to negotiate the acceptance of porn as an outlet for this guy if his partner's not too interested in sex. But it should be, you know, moderation. We're back to moderation, right? If it's every day, then sometimes that can lead to erectile dysfunction for the man. Because
yeah, they've got an actual, there's a guy named Dr. Bob Arnault who's described a new condition called sexual attention deficit disorder, or SAD, which posits that men who watch too much porn run the risk of losing their ability to perform in real life. Mm-hmm. And it talks about, again, porn triggering feelings of self-centeredness, exactly what you said. And there's nothing much more, there's not much more self, anything more self-centered than you know, triggering your own orgasm. And you cease to care about the pleasure of your own partner. So,
well, that's right. And then the man is, since he's using his own hand, his penis gets exactly the stimulation that he needs. And when that penis is in a vagina, it may not be the same. And so a lot of guys end up either losing their erection or just not having the pleasure that they might have because they're so used to their own hand. Masturbation.
So you run the risk of virtual sex again, replacing real time romance, and you're back to teledildonics and you know all these other kind of crazy things that may be forthcoming. But you know, it is problematic. The genders are definitely, you know, in many cases in the process of going their separate ways. If we've got some time left, we can talk about some, you know, sort of how the women's movement has changed a lot of that. But I mean,
well, let's do that.
There's no question. But what I mean, when I get, for example, I run the biggest divorce firm in Hawaii, and I've been doing it for 40 years. So I'm a pretty experienced divorce lawyer.
Yes, you are.
I've got a lot of clients coming through my office. I mean, tens of thousands of them. And
yeah.
You know, one thing that a trend that I've detected over the years is that the men, after their divorces, are very quick to remarry, jump back into other relationships. In fact, if a guy files for a divorce, it's oftentimes because he's already got a side relationship on, you know, that's up and going that's causing the divorce in the first place. I mean, men are basically lazy and won't get off their what we say in Hawaii, their okole, which is Hawaiian for ass. They won't get off their ass and get out of their lazy boy lounger unless they've got a reason to. So oftentimes they don't file for divorce unless they've got a new gal that's kind of prodding it along. Whereas women file for divorces for, you know, all kinds of what I would say the right reasons. I mean, you know, they feel there's not enough, you know, communication in their relationship that to warrant carrying it on, whereas guys don't even know what the hell communication even means. So, you know, you've got this dichotomy to begin with as far as the causes of divorce, but you also, as far as the outgrowth of it, guys turn around and get remarried usually much faster than women. Usually within about 3 years, guys are back to being remarried, whereas women oftentimes don't want to get remarried at all, or if they do, they take a lot longer to settle in. They've got a much lengthier and more serious list of qualifications and criteria other than just, you know, oh, I met a new gal and she's younger and has bigger boobs. Guys are easily swayed, whereas women, you know, are looking for, you know, some of the more real criteria. And a lot of times women don't want to remarry at all. They, you know, they spend half of their life taking care of this oaf. And you know, that's part of the reason they're getting divorced in the first place. And they're not dying to repeat that whole scenario. So it is definitely a whole different deal as far as how women, you know, approach this whole situation compared to guys.
Yes, and then you get some of the women who are, say, over 55, and they're divorced, and they discover that some of the older men, maybe in their 70s and 80s, are looking for, and this is not original, but a nurse with a purse. You know,
a nurse with a purse.
Yeah, and my mother, who died last week at 95, she had a 96-year-old boyfriend. And the night before she died, so this would be August 1st. She'd gotten her hair done that day, and they had dinner together, and they danced together, and I saw this wonderful gentleman, and he's just, well, he was a big hero in World War II. I mean, he was flew planes, you know, like Top Gun kind of planes. And but he really loved my mother, and he told a funny story about how mother said to him, well, I've been widowed 3 times, and I'm not going to marry again. And then he joked with her back, well, you probably ran out of the poison mushroom stuff. Of course, that was not true. But my mother really enjoyed men, and she really enjoyed her last boyfriend, shall we say. But back to the topic, I just felt I wanted to honor my mother. She was such a good mother, and she had a good death. And I'm saying that on the air, in that she was taking a bath and in the warm water, and she died peacefully. And that's, you know, most of us want that. If not in the saddle, that's how I hope to die.
Well, she made it to 95, which is a pretty good run.
It's a pretty good run.
Especially, you know, my mom's 92.
Yeah.
But she doesn't have any boyfriends, and she's certainly not going dancing. And you know, it's a different deal. I think for a lot of women. But I think you're right. A lot of women are not dying to nurse older gentlemen.
Right.
And they. So there's an interesting you know, Jane Fonda. I think I mentioned this on your show before, but she wrote a book called Prime Time, which I'm sure you've read or at least familiar with. You know,
no, read it and underlined it, and it's a great
book.
Yeah.
So she, you know, she's been on the cutting edge of a lot of different stuff, and they asked her, and you know, one of which was, you know, aerobics and, you know, the videotapes for staying healthy and all that, and she stays in pretty good shape. And they asked her whether or not, you know, out of all the men she'd been married to, I think she was married to Tom Hayden, the old student radical, and I think of Roger Vadim, the French film director. And,
no, Roger
and then, of course,
was the first one. Tom was the second one.
And then, of course, Ted Turner. So they asked her, you know, on a radio show or a TV show, you know, which of your ex-husbands, if you had it to do over again, would you want to be married to at this stage of your life? And she said, none of them. She said,
right.
I wouldn't want to be married to any guy. I'd much rather be hanging out on a desert island. I think the question was, if you were on a desert island, with who would you be with? And she said, I'd rather be with a bunch of my girlfriends.
And
that's exactly what I see a lot of the time.
Right. I'm glad you brought up Jane Fonda. She's pretty amazing, and she's written books, and she's smart, and she does good research. And I do like the book Prime. And
Prime
so
time,
thank
yeah.
you for mentioning that. And she, as a 79-year-old, I think she is now.
Yeah, probably.
You know, she did all those aerobics in the 80s and produced those tapes, and she continues to exercise. And, you know, it's use it or lose it. And I know you exercise. You're pretty close to the Outrigger Canoe Club, and you live pretty close there, and you swim and you run and you do a lot of good exercise. And I think when we're younger, you know, exercise, moving is not so necessary, maybe, but when you're older, it's a mandate. You've got to exercise.
Yeah, totally. Well, if you want to have the later years be, you know, ambulatory and fun, you certainly have to stay healthy, no question about it.
Yeah, and
you haven't seen me for a while, but I just lost 20 pounds. I was not really overweight to begin with, but I just thought, you know, I'd rather be lighter, and I just lost 20 pounds by just cutting out booze, sugar, and carbohydrates.
Wow.
You know, that was the only change in my diet, and bang, off went 20 pounds.
Well, I've never seen you look heavy, but that's you're going to live a long time. And you know that when I did studies in the early 90s on aging and sexuality with Dr. Walter Bortz, an MD in the Palo Alto area, we came up with this aging test. And if you think about it, our bodies do three main things. They do other things, but three main things. They move, they think, and they make love. And so you get a point a day. All of this is use it or lose it. Point a day, if you walk a mile, you can run a mile, you don't get 2 points if you do 2 miles, but there are lots of equivalents of exercise. Then you get a point a day if for cognition, for thinking. So you've got to do more than read the newspaper. And so that's figuring out something on the computer. For a lot of older, including my mother, she played bridge. That's a good game, and crossword puzzles. My fiance Brian does those every day, and fast New York Times crossword puzzles. I'm always so impressed. So there are lots of equivalents for exercise. The equivalents for making love are a little harder to pinpoint, but they involve putting your sensual self into action. So hugging, touching, it's so good for us. Oral sex and intercourse get the biggest point, although masturbation does count. So you're up to 3 points a day, moving, thinking, making love. You get 2 additional points a day if you're staying engaged in life. Now, this is more for retired folks. Don't retire, redirect. That continue to feel necessary. Maybe
that's
just
an
volunteer
that's
work.
That's an interesting yardstick. I like that one. The point system for active aging.
Yeah, so you're up to potentially 5 points a day and 35 points a day, a week. And, of course, you're not going to be able to sustain that. But, in other words, to stay strong, smart, sexy, and savvy. But the one with the most accumulated points at the end of the life wins because it shows that you have maintained quality of life as you've aged.
Cool.
Don't you like that test?
Yeah, that makes sense.
And aren't you doing all of those things? You're keeping your points up, Brad.
Okay. I'm gonna go for those extra orgasm points next. That's good.
Oh, good.
I already run and swim all the time, so I'm. It's funny. My mother does the crossword puzzles too. She's 92 and she's faster than I would ever dream of being.
Yeah, your mom's keeping her brain good. That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you have good genes. How old was your dad when he died?
Way too young. Way too young. He died at 73.
Oh, yeah, that is too young. My goodness, that's younger than I am now.
If that's the standard, then I've only got about 7 years left. So I'm hoping we can get beyond that. But again, he was like your mom's boyfriend. He was a big war hero pilot flying over the English Channel in unpressurized planes and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, that may have taken a toll. Those guys didn't quite realize it at 18.
Yes. I got mom's boyfriend, and so did Brian, to tell some of his war stories, because he needed more closure with my mother's death, and it was fascinating. You know, it was like living history as he told the stories. Well, you know, we've gone off topic a little bit, but I think it all contributes to our overall discussions, right?
And, love, lust, and laughter, you know, I mean, all of it's important.
Right. Yeah, it's all important. And I encourage you listeners to get Brad's book. It's about everything. It isn't just divorce, as he said earlier. So 5th edition, Divorce with Decency, the complete how-to handbook and survivor's guide to the legal, emotional, economic, and social issues. And as, of course, I only have the 4th edition, but I, you know, it's okay. And it now
includes... Better send you the 5th.
I need a 5th. And I'm not taking a fifth to get a fifth.
Okay.
Please. But now includes invaluable information on can your marriage be saved and what we've been talking about, love in the internet age. So it's really just, it's a really complete book, and I'm not surprised that you got to edition number 5. Don't some of your clients come in, and your new clients, and say they've read your book?
Oh yeah. I mean, it's definitely great. You know, great. It's great for the reputation of the firm, because the book has been very well received. It won the Hawaii Book Publishers Award for best new reference book when it came out, and it's definitely a lot of people are looking for. I mean, the title again, Divorce with Decency, is not always possible. I mean, you know, a lot of people are determined to be indecent as they divorce, but we usually try to start out that way, and a lot of people are hopeful that result can be achieved, and certainly we try to steer it in that direction. You know, lawyers have a tendency to make things more adversarial and more complicated and more expensive, and we try to make it less so. So the firm I run is the biggest divorce firm in Hawaii. It has been for 40 years now. So,
and the clients
love it. Not all the opposing attorneys like it. A lot of the opposing attorneys would rather that these things all dragged out a little bit longer. But
they make more money that way.
But the courts like it because we streamline the procedure, and the clients love it. So.
Of course, and I can't tell you how often I recommend divorce mediation as opposed to having two attorneys, because
they do
drive up the prices. And
I'm a trained mediator as well, and I've done that longer than almost anybody in town. So yeah, no, that's essential.
Yeah,
and you know, not just in divorce, but in any area. I mean, if your listeners can get the hang of in any area of their lives, whether it be, you know, contracts, business contracts, whatever, if you can zero in on mediation or arbitration, it all falls under the title of ADR, or alternative dispute resolution. You know, try and get those kind of clauses included in your contracts so as to avoid the litigation scenario if you possibly can.
That's very good advice. So, Brad, we're coming to the end of the program. There's the music.
Oh, aren't we though? Yes.
Thank you so much. And of course,
we'll have you
back
in the fall, and we'll talk about the women's movement and the rise of the she economy, Diana.
We will next time. Thank you, Bradley.
Aloha, everybody.
Aloha, everybody. Bye-bye.
Bye.